My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
It's time now to go beyond the headlines and for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Welcome into the Insiders. I am James Hamm. Joining me today, we have Chris Biederman from the Sacramento Bee and, of course, the Candlestick Chronicles. What's up, Chris?
What's up, man? I appreciate you reaching out and having me, taking a risk, honestly. This is my first ever appearance in a studio hosting a radio show for multiple hours. I've done plenty of radio hits, but I appreciate you sticking your neck out for me.
All right. I just, hopefully Jesse has his finger on the dump button in case Chris says something.
Chris, if you don't cuss, you'll be just fine.
All right.
That's right. As long as you don't say the bad words, we'll be okay. We can sit here and fight. Like, we can go back and forth here. I'm not physically going to fight Chris Biederman. He's a big dude, and I'm not going to physically fight him, especially with all my ailments. But I certainly, we don't always get along. Well, we
get along.
We get along. We don't always see eye to eye.
Yeah, that's fair. There's healthy debate.
Yeah, there is healthy debate. Yeah, I think me and Jason Anderson used to have the same thing.
Yeah.
Jason, not so much anymore. He's so beat down by the job that I don't think Jason's got any fight left in him.
Maybe because of me, given that he's my sports editor. So yeah, that could be possible.
Yeah, it is possible. So maybe Chris Biederman is beat up Jason Anderson behind the scenes.
I'm a lover, not a fighter.
There we go. That's exactly what the Sacramento Kings looked like last night. Lovers, not fighters. They fell to the Oklahoma City Thunder by a final of 112-105. Chris, another 20-point lead blown. Another team that you had on the ropes and didn't put away. Another really, really brutal loss late in this season. Just what were your first takeaways watching the game last night?
Yeah, it was a little bit similar to the New York game last week that I was at and against the Knicks. And I think what's become apparent, you know, with Malik Monk out, the Kings are, you know, the offense is still good, but they are a little bit easier to defend because they don't have a lot of guys who can beat or who can win off the dribble one-on-one, right? So Mike Brown preaches, you know, touch the paint and spray, and I think that can work to an extent. But when it gets to crunch time and when you face a really good defensive team like the Knicks were or the Mavericks are or Oklahoma City, when they ramp it up to 11, the drive and kick stuff doesn't always work, and you just need guys to get buckets. And, you know, Malik Monk is the Kings' second best guy at just getting buckets off the dribble. So they're really missing that, and their offense, I think, is a little bit one note when they don't have that dynamic, and they don't have the two-man game with Malik Monk and Domantas Sabonis. And sometimes I think they're too heavily reliant on De'Aaron Fox, particularly with Monk out. So I think, you know, I'm not fully on board with what Mike Brown said after the game, like talking about guys passing up open shots that, you know, they took 58 threes. It was, you know,
that's a lot of threes.
They took a ton of threes, right? So I think it's, you know, that's going to happen. Like, that's the value of defense, right? If we zoom out and say, okay, what's been the Kings' biggest issue over the last couple of years? We could make a good case for it being defense. Now, it's been better the last month or so, or since the All-Star break. The defense has been markedly better, particularly with Keon Ellis in the starting lineup. But the value of defense is proven when OKC can turn it up to 11 and put the clamps on you. That's ultimately what helps you win in the playoffs and against good teams. And the Kings, while they've been able to play better defense in stretches, they haven't played defense that really changes the tenor of a game. And I thought Oklahoma City's defense changed the tenor of the game more so than what the Kings weren't doing. I just think when you don't have Malik Monk, the offense is more limited and you're more prone to getting clamped by a good defense. Is like, that's my opinion of what happened last night.
Yeah, and I agree. You and I were discussing before we came on the air. I agree that that the Malik Monk loss is probably, like, it's just something that they can't sustain without him. They can't. They can beat some teams, but you're not going to be able to play a 48-minute game. And I personally believe that it's Sabonis who's impacted the most by Malik being gone, because he gets Sabonis in different actions. So I think no one should be happy that Sabonis took 7 shots last night. No one should be happy that he turned the ball over 6 times. His double-double streak ends at 61 games. I actually think that's a good thing, Chris. To be honest with you, the double-double streak seemed to be weighing on him in a weird way. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's just some arbitrary number that's floating out there. No one really, really cares, like, how many straight double-doubles you have, unless you're part of some record-breaking run. Now it's like, hey, get back to the basics, get back to who you are. But again, not having Malik to break down defenses and to feed him while the defense is collapsing on someone else, it just changes the dynamic completely. And I think that the Kings have done the best they can. I think Mike Brown has done the best he can to try to find pieces that will work and, you know, to try to slide guys in and give guys opportunities. I think Keon Ellis has been just outstanding.
Yeah, it's tremendous.
Yeah, I mean, it's not every game, but I think we'll get to this a little bit later, but when you see a young guy go off for 26 points, it all of a sudden changes your idea on what a ceiling might be. Just like when early in the season, Keegan Murray goes for 45. All of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, maybe there is something different here. So I was excited to see that. But overall, I think it should be disappointment. It should be that the Kings have this thing where when you talk about when the defense goes to an 11, how do you score? Do you do? And to be honest with you, the Kings stop relying on the basics of their offense and they start going to weird stuff that doesn't make any sense. And then sometimes they just miss 4 3-pointers in a row in 15 seconds.
Sure. Yeah. And I think too, like, obviously, look, when you lose one of your best players, other guys have to step up. But I think it also highlights some issues that the Kings have with roster construction.
Of course. Right?
Like, Keegan Murray might end up becoming an All-Star, but he's just not there yet. And he's, you know, he's in his second season. It would probably be unfair to expect him to be, you know, the second leading scorer on a contending team at this point in his career. But Harrison Barnes can have games where he scores 2 points. He has games where he can score 24 points. But I think the inconsistency with that 3 spot and the fact that the Kings don't really have a true small forward who comes off the bench, right? Like, they have 2, basically 3 or 4 guys who play 3 and 4 in Keegan Murray and Harrison Barnes. And those are really the only 3s that they have in their rotation.
Yes.
When they go to the bench, it's a lot of small guards. It's Trey Lyles, who is a very good player and great for his role, but he's a 4-5. And then they have a bunch of ones and twos. They need more strength. I think they need more athleticism on the wing. Like, what Kessler Edwards represents is what the Kings need.
Of course.
But Kessler Edwards isn't there yet to consistently earn rotation minutes, in my opinion. So, you know, that'll be interesting to see in the offseason. Can the Kings get more athletic? And can they, you know, and we'll talk about Malik Monk's future and what Domantas Sabonis said about keeping Malik Monk too. But, they need bucket getters. When you look at the rest of the West, right? When it comes to the playoffs, you're not always going to be able to run your offense, particularly late in games and crunch time. It's just going to be up to your guys to go get buckets. Mm-hmm. And right now, with Malik Monk out, it feels like De'Aaron Fox is the only guy that can do that. And so that's a huge challenge for the Kings, particularly when they go against these teams that are really good at defending, like Oklahoma City, like Dallas, like the Knicks, like Boston. Which we've seen all recently with Malik Monk out, right? So that I think is going to be something that we can talk about in the offseason for sure. But for now, it's, you know, can you survive with Malik Monk out? And is Malik Monk going to be able to come back maybe for the play-in or maybe this weekend? That's something we can dive into later in the show, too.
Yeah. Well, the Kings lost. And I think everybody out there is feeling a little bummed out by that. But at the same time, the Suns got destroyed. They made it close later in the game, but they were down 1 point. I think it was like 53-13 or something. It was something so lopsided that I had to like dive into the box score and be like, okay, this can't be real. And sure enough, it was. They were down tremendously early in the game. And that's big because now you've got a game coming up against the Suns. You trail the Suns by one game in the standings. You trail the Pelicans by two games in the standings. You also have a game against the Pelicans. Like, the sixth seed isn't gone. The sixth seed is teetering. But then, man, Chris, you got these other two teams that all of a sudden are biting at your heels. So yeah. You got the Warriors, you got the Lakers, who are now just a game back in the loss column of the Kings. And Sacramento has to continue to win to get through this. And this sets up like the craziest weekend of chaos that I've ever seen in the NBA, whether it's the 1-2-3 fighting it out or it's the 6-7-8-9-10 fighting it out for a playoff position or play-in position. I think this is going to be great, great theater this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you have no idea really like what there are kind of endless possibilities when it comes to the play-in and the first round of the playoffs, right? Like, it's the Kings could go to Phoenix and have to play the Suns and they win and they're the seventh seed, or they could fall into 9-10. They have to play either the Warriors or the Lakers and then they have to win another game or to get to the eighth seed, right? So yeah. Like they, and then when you have the 1-2-3 seeds, three teams are separated by one game and the Timberwolves and Nuggets are tied from a record standpoint. So the Kings conceivably could play. I mean, if they get out of the playoffs or get out of the play-in, they could play three different teams, Minnesota, Denver, and OKC. I don't know who you really pick in terms of like if you could pick your matchup that would give you the best shot at advancing if you're Sacramento. But I think that's a good thing about the play-in tournament, honestly, because how often have we looked at the end of the NBA regular season and there's just not a whole lot on the line and we're all just kind of like, man, just get us to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Get us to the playoff. Teams are resting, guys. Teams are tanking. But this is a very interesting dynamic, and ultimately I think it's been pretty successful from the NBA's perspective.
Yeah, I think it has too. And we can look at, you know, just so people are out there, the Timberwolves, right? The Timberwolves are fighting it out. They're tied for the one seed. They play at Denver tonight. They play Friday against the Hawks, and of course the Hawks are getting Trae Young back. Minnesota might also be getting Karl Anthony Towns back.
Mm-hmm.
And then they finish on Sunday with the Suns. And so it sets up like this, what in the world? Like, every single game matters. Every single game has this heightened like feel to it. And, you know, Phoenix is in the same boat. Phoenix plays the Clippers again tonight. Then they play the Kings on Friday. And then they play, of course, Minnesota on Sunday. Like, this is going to be a battle. It's just a bare knuckle. Everyone is fighting it out, trying to get position. I think it's brilliant, brilliant theater. And hat tip to Adam Silver and his group for coming up with some sort of way to enhance the regular season, to eliminate some of the tanking, and to make this such high theater coming down the stretch. All right, we're going to step aside. We got to take our first break. When we come back, well, six quick thoughts. We'll dive deep into the Sacramento Kings loss to the Oklahoma City Thunder. After that, we've got all kinds of stuff. We're going to talk A's. We're going to talk Rivercats. We're going to talk Sabonis. We're going to talk Niners because Chris Biederman is a Niners guy. You are listening to The Insiders. I am James Hamm. He is Chris Biederman filling in for Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube. See you in just a minute.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Insiders. I am James Hamm. Kyle Madsen is hanging out in jolly old England. Have you talked to him? What's he doing?
He's doing some Harry Potter stuff.
Oh, that makes sense.
He's drinking some beer, as my guy is prone to do.
Yes.
I haven't spoken to him beyond a few text messages, and we're in a couple group chats. So
okay,
we fire some jokes off and stuff. But with the time difference, it's like he's wake up and see 10 texts that are all basically reacting to everything that came in the night before because he's just waking up. So
yeah, because even right now it's 6 o'clock in the afternoon where he's at. So
right,
yeah. So we always have the cereal connection here in the chat. He's very much intrigued by cereal, and he always wants to know, what is your cereal of choice for all of our guests?
I keep it pretty simple. Honey Nut Cheerios.
See, I grew up on Honey Nut Cheerios because my mom would let us have sugar cereals, and then my best friend had all the good stuff. Like, he had Cocoa Krispies, he had Fruit Loops, he had Trix, but we got Honey Nut Cheerios.
Honey Nut Cheerios is probably a sugar cereal, isn't it?
Well, not really. It's not like one of the big, you know.
Not like Fruit Loops or Apple Jacks or...
Yeah, but I did grow up just like grabbing a handful and just eating them all day.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like...
Can't go wrong.
Yeah, you can't go wrong. All right, we got to get to six quick thoughts. We'll dive deep into this Kings game now. Jesse, cue music.
How'd yesterday's Kings game go? Kings insider
not great,
James
Bob.
Hamm has six notes you need to know. Here are James Hamm's six quick thoughts.
All right, let's get thought number one, Jay.
Let's dive into this thing. That's weird. I can't hear myself all of a sudden, Jesse. The Keon Ellis game. Out of nowhere, the Sacramento Kings had Keon Ellis go absolutely crazy. He goes 8 of 15 from three-point range, career best 26 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 blocks. Best game as a pro. Chris, your thoughts?
Have you seen Keon Ellis shoot up close, like during pregame?
Yeah, I think so.
He's probably the best shooter I've ever seen who's the rotation on the ball as he shoots is sideways.
Yeah.
I saw that and I was like, there's no way this guy's going to be a good shooter in the NBA, but he has been. So
he throws a knuckleball.
Yeah, well, it spins sideways. It spins left to right.
I wonder if he's onto something. I wonder if just the world didn't know that...
A market inefficiency.
Yeah, there it is. There it is. All right, let's get to quick thought number two. De'Aaron Fox came to play. He started cooking from the outside early. 21 of his 31 of his 33 points came in the first half. He added 8 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals. I thought he brought energy. I also thought he faded when things went sideways.
Yeah, I think it's just like I said, the Oklahoma City Thunder have a lot of defenders who can credibly guard De'Aaron Fox.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's Lu Dort, whether it's Shea, whether it's even Giddey, like they just Cason Wallace, they have a lot of guys.
Yeah.
Jalen Williams, who are athletic enough, so they can throw a bunch of different looks at him. And I think that's ultimately the best way to guard De'Aaron, is just have a bunch of guys with length and athleticism that you can throw at him.
I also thought, first of all, he shot a lot of threes. He goes 7-17 from three, right?
Yeah.
And at first I was like, well, the reason why he's not getting to the free throw line is because all he's shooting is threes. But he had 12 other shots that weren't threes. And I do think he got battered. And yeah. I do think that he did not get the respect that Shea was getting. And I think it got under his skin. And I think he started getting chirpy with the officials, which never helps. And I also think that played into sort of a lack, the team concentrating too much on the officials and not enough on the game through stretches in the third and early fourth quarter. And so I thought that was a bit of an issue.
Yeah, I have thoughts on that we'll get into in the 11 o'clock hour, because there was a lot of that kind of conversation on the last road trip that I had with some players and even Mike Brown. So, I think what I'll say right now is I think a next level of De'Aaron's game, right? Like a level that De'Aaron took this year was shooting more threes and shooting them efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
I think next year it's going to be about getting to the free throw line more consistently. I think that's the next step in his, star rise in the league.
I think it's interesting because he used to do that. His free throw numbers have come down, not just percentage wise. He's up to 73.3%, which isn't great, but it's better than it was earlier in the season. He's at 5.8 free throw attempts per game. A couple of years ago, he was at 7.2.
Yeah.
It's partially because of the officiating, the way the game's being called, but it's also, I just don't think that he's not selling it, Chris. So we'll get into it later.
Yeah, well, I have thoughts on that.
Okay. Bolt of lightning. Davion Mitchell has gone from a fringe rotational player to a key cog in a matter of a couple of weeks. Most of that is because of Malik Monk. I thought Davion in the first half was so incredibly impactful, attacking the rim, attacking the paint so fast, flying all over the court. He had 8 points, but then again, he's one of the guys where it just dissipated. Like, what happened? And I'm not sure why that is, but it's been a couple of games in a row where we see the burst of energy early. And I think it plays into a bigger conversation of being Malik Monk is much more difficult than you think it is.
Yeah. Like the big difference between Davion and Malik Monk is Malik is the most confident individual, like one of the most confident individuals I've ever been around in sports.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And Davion, like his confidence can come and go. And I think that was part of the issue early in the season when he fell out of the rotation, was his confidence wasn't always there. And it's been there lately. That's coincided with Malik Monk being out. And that's been a huge reason why he's been scoring. The key for him going forward in his career is going to be maintaining that confidence and being confident no matter what his role is. That's going to be the step for him as he continues through the league, in my opinion.
Yeah, I love talking to Davion because I think confidence is a weird thing. Like, and I think someone could say, what do you mean he's not confident? And I think it means that he doesn't feel comfortable in his surroundings sometimes, which is something that I see on the court. Like, mm-hmm. he feels the same way that I see him. Like, there are so many moments where he looks like he doesn't fit in with the other four players on the court.
Sure.
That he's not part of the flow. I think he feels that. And he doesn't know why it is that way either. And then all of a sudden we see him just like go, go, go. And it's like, okay, there you go, man. Stop hesitating.
Yeah.
Stop having that little bit of doubt in the back of your mind. And I think that's what you mean by confidence. It's that little seed of doubt that sort of seeps in. Let's get to number four. Woke up. Third quarter is becoming Keegan Murray time. He struggled early, like most of the Kings not named De'Aaron Fox, Keon Ellis, or Davion Mitchell. You know, there was a point, 2 minutes left in the second quarter, Chris, where Keegan Murray hit a three. That was the first basket made by a King not named De'Aaron Fox, Keon Ellis, or Davion Mitchell. Like, the first 22 minutes of the game were only those three scoring, and it was totally bizarre. I think they started, the other guys started 0 of 14 from the field. Keegan got it going, though. We need more, but I do like the 15 points and 10 rebounds. I wish it would have been, you know, 22 points and 10 rebounds, but I think we're getting there. We're getting closer.
Yeah, and I don't want to heap too much pressure on Keegan Murray, but to me, the Kings' trajectory over the next 3-5 seasons is all about how good Keegan Murray becomes.
Yeah.
Because if he becomes an all-star, okay, then maybe we talk about the Kings as a consistent top four, top five seed in the West. If Keegan doesn't become an all-star and he becomes, I don't know, name like an average wing player.
Or maybe a really good defender slash okay scorer.
Yeah. The guy's name in Philadelphia is eluding me right now. But anyway, if Keegan's an all-star, that's huge for the Kings. If Keegan's not, then that's kind of problematic given how much they feel like they've invested in his development.
You mean Tobias Harris?
Yes, Tobias Harris.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I think that's the question. Does he become, and I'll just keep throwing other names out there, does he become like the Rudy Gay of the Kings?
Sure.
Like, and I'd say the same thing, Tobias Harris, Caesar, and even Harrison Barnes.
Right.
Like, these are non-all-stars, but they're close. They're the step right below all-star. I think that's okay, but if that's going to be who he is, the Kings have to find someone else.
Yeah, because those guys are expensive. Like, those guys ultimately get contracts that are commensurate with all-stars, right? Like, Tobias Harris makes a ton of money.
Well, yeah, I mean, we could do pocket watching, and and I can guarantee you that Harrison Barnes' career earnings would, like, it's jarring.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, he's made close to $250 million.
Right. So if Keegan ends up getting, I think what I'm saying, like, Keegan's trending towards getting that type of money. So if the Kings maximize what Keegan becomes by, you know, him becoming an all-star, then he's worth that money. If he just gets that money and then he kind of just, like, you know, peters out and or levels out, mm-hmm. and doesn't elevate who they are, then that's where you start looking at the contract and being like, man, that's not a great use of resources.
Exactly. It's there was a point where Harrison Barnes making $25 million a year in a time where $25 million a year meant a lot, and he wasn't a $25 million player.
Exactly.
Okay, the streak ends. That's our number five. Domantas Sabonis put up big numbers against Chet Holmgren all season, but it wasn't the case in this one. He struggled, man. He turned the ball over 6 times, 8 points, 13 rebounds, 5 assists. It just was not, you could see the angst on his face and the fact that he understood that he was struggling and that he knew that it was hurting his team, and it was getting under his skin.
Yeah, and that there were, you know, a couple shots, I think, as the broadcast was going to commercial, you know, he's arguing with Mike Brown and sort of Malik Monk.
Or Jordy
about something. And I don't know what it is. I don't want to make it more than it is, but it's just, it speaks to him being frustrated overall.
Yeah.
And I wonder, as a leader of the team, and we can have a bigger discussion about King's leadership maybe, but, like, as a leader of the team, you know, you want everyone on the same page. You want that guy to be a galvanizing force, and not, and you don't love to see in a big moment him arguing with an assistant coach or him needing to be calmed down by Malik Monk, who's in street clothes, right? So that was super notable to me on top of just the performance overall. And I think, you know, Domas, I mean, Anthony Davis aside, he's dominated Anthony Davis, but I think the best way to match up with Domas is with length. Mm. And Chet Holmgren obviously has that. He's not the strongest guy, and that was an issue in their matchups earlier this season, but it seemed like Holmgren defended him a lot better last night.
Yeah, Holmgren is growing. Okay, we got to get to this last one really quick. We had a strange night. Harrison Barnes wasn't a non-factor like he had been in normal games, but he was 1 of 8 from the field, but then 8 of 10 from the free throw line. He grabbed 6 rebounds, which is a good thing, but overall, Harrison Barnes had another basic Harrison Barnes night. Quickly, Chris, any thoughts on Harrison Barnes?
I mean, the fact that you would call it a Harrison Barnes night, I think speaks to what the issue might be overall with Harrison, is that it's a roller coaster. Sometimes it's great, and you win a lot of games when he's good, and then when he's bad or not scoring, particularly without Malik, then, you know, it's problematic for you.
Yeah, definitely. All right, we're going to step aside. When we come back, we have a Jiffy Lube player of the game to give away. That's awesome. We're going to dive into this Sabonis slash Monk conversation that we've got kind of hanging out there. So we are the Insiders here on ESPN 1320, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. See you in just a minute. Welcome back into the Insiders here on ESPN 1320. I'm James. Joining me, Chris Biederman. We're doing ham and side dishes this week. Chris is like, what in the world did I just get into? On Monday, we decided that Jesse was mashed potatoes. Yesterday, Jerry threw us for a loop.
Yeah, what did Jerry say he was?
Turnip greens.
I don't think I've ever had turnip greens before.
Turnip greens. He said they have them at the Cracker Barrel. Plus, you know, like, he's from backwoods Indiana.
They eat turnip greens out there?
I guess. I mean, Jerry grew up, with the dirt floor. Jerry grew up in they had the party line. So if your neighbor was on the phone, you'd have to get on and say, hey, I need to use the phone to call somebody. And they'd be like, hang on, give me a few minutes, and then I'll let you go. And, of course, Jerry grew up with Larry Bird. Who was really close with Jerry's younger brother. And so the crazy story he told us yesterday about Larry Bird. He told Larry Bird just like, man, you are such a great rebounder. He's like, you're averaging 11 rebounds a game from the small forward position. He goes, oh, no, I'm a really bad rebounder. He's like, what? He goes, yeah, you know who's a great rebounder is Kevin McHale. He's like, yeah, but Kevin's averaging 8 rebounds a game from the power forward spot. He goes, yeah, but see, Kevin only goes for like 10 rebounds a game. And he gets 8 of them. He's like, I go for every rebound all night long. And so I might come up with 11, but I tried for like 35. And I thought, all right, that's a good story.
Yeah.
It's a good story.
That's interesting. So going back to the side dish thing, we assign ourselves. We say what we are as side dishes.
Yeah. What do you think you would be as a side dish?
I have given this zero thought. How about some like barbecue baked beans with like chunks of bacon?
See, that makes perfect sense.
You think that's good?
No, that is exactly, okay. Yep. Okay, that's a good one. That's a good one.
No, I'm a big baked beans guy. That might be the best answer so far this week.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
We also got Kyle Madsen in the chat. Shout out Kyle. He's in here.
What?
Wow, from 5,000 miles away.
Kyle is the ultimate side dish. I don't know what that is, but...
Pause.
Yeah, there we are. Thanks, Kyle. We're doing great. We're making it, friend. We're making it. Of course, Kyle Madsen, our friend, is in the chat right now as from jolly old England, which means he's probably had a few beers. I'm just saying.
I could only hope. I gave him a couple recommendations for his time in the UK, so hopefully he's enjoying himself.
I hope so too. All right, so let's get to this conversation. We had this. So first of all, you were on the road trip. You talked to some of these guys in New York a couple of times.
Yeah.
Mike Scotto from Hoops Hype was also there. He's a friend of the show. He's a good dude. I really dig Mike.
I enjoyed meeting Mike for sure.
Yeah, he's definitely a good dude. We communicate quite a bit, and he actually sent me a piece that he wrote this morning about. It was a quote from Sabonis. So, and it's funny because he was with you in the locker room and had some of these conversations, and then he followed up afterwards after you left and had his own conversation. I miss being on the road because, man, the conversations are so much better when you are like one-on-one and there aren't 6 cameras running.
Yeah. The access on the road is a lot better, particularly pregame, because pulling the curtain back, I don't know if you've talked about this on air that much, but like when the Kings are home, the players have so many places to be that aren't the locker room.
Yeah.
To get, you know, massages or stretched out or do some weightlifting pregame, whatever. On the road, they're all kind of confined to the locker room. So
yes.
when there is access pregame to the locker room on the road, if you need to get somebody, there's a really good chance that you're going to be able to get them, which is not always the case at home. Some of the best access you get is on the road. And so I was able to get... I was able to talk to Malik a little bit about his recovery. That was the first time I think he spoke publicly since the injury. Being on the road is, in terms of access, is great.
Yeah, I would even say right now, just so people know, I go in the locker room and pregame, and for some reason, my friend Chris is not in the locker room and pregame. We won't get into that. I'm usually by myself. Sometimes there is one other reporter that will pop in or two other reporters. But I actually, like Chris, I have to do that.
Yeah.
I have to stake our claim.
Mm-hmm.
Because if someone doesn't do it,
yeah,
they're going to take it away from us.
Sure.
And so I'm like, hey, no, I'm going to stand in here. I'll be the man on the moon with the flag, like holding it up saying, hey, we've been here.
Yes.
But if we don't, they're slowly going to take it away and take it away. There's usually one player, maybe two players in the locker room at any given time. Sasha Vezinkov usually comes in and he sits, and that's why I talk to Sasha, just like you've talked to Sasha.
Yeah.
On occasion, Alex Lim will come in. Domas runs in for a couple of minutes. My friend Doug Christie comes in and sits down, and we chat for a few minutes. De'Aaron comes in and gets changed really quick and then goes out, and then he comes back for like the last 2 minutes of that session. And then Malik Monk will come in, but it's more like hanging out with Malik. Yeah, and that's what I like to do. I like to make sure that they know, like, we're part of their world. And
yeah.
So,
I mean, the best thing to do with athletes, really, at any level, is just to have conversations with them about normal stuff that's not related to basketball.
Yeah.
And then be like, all right, hey, I got to do this story. Like, can I ask you about this? And then they'll be more inclined to talk to you.
Yeah,
if, like, your entire existence in their world is not just, hey, prodding them with questions. Like, no, you're a human. You experience things outside of basketball too. Like, what's that like?
Exactly. I had a moment with Malik where he was talking about he was going to go golfing the next day. And I'm like,
yeah.
I'm like, where are you going? He goes, I feel like you're going to stalk me or something. And I'm like, bro, like, I have no back. I can't golf at all. Like, not anymore. Like, I used to golf. I've golfed all over Sacramento. Yeah. I used to golf with Doug. I know golfing in Sacramento. I'm like, where are you going? I don't care. And he laughs, and he goes on. You know, a lot of times he tells me and Sean and the rest of the media to F off, but not using the F.
I get plenty of that too, yes.
Yeah, and it's all in fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just his way of, like, playing and, like, being friendly. But let's get to this quote that we've got from Mike Scotto. Sabonis told Mike Scotto from Hoops Hype, we better keep him, about Monk. I think there's no excuse. I'll talk to Monty. I'll talk to Vivek. We need to keep him. He's a big piece for us moving forward. I mean, I think that's everyone's sentiment in Sacramento. It might even be Malik's sentiment, but the dollars and cents are really difficult here. And I don't know. I mean, did you go to Orlando? You were in Orlando.
Yeah, I was in Orlando.
Yeah, and there's a buzz there, right?
I mean, the media folks who cover the team would not stop talking about the idea of Malik Monk being with the Orlando Magic next year, because he's sort of represents exactly what they need. And it's the same reason why you hear Klay Thompson's name linked to Orlando too. And then Malik went out and shot 0 for.
He was bad.
had one of his worst games of the season. I don't know if it was related or not. But yeah, I mean, you can explain it better than me, but, you know, in terms of there being no excuses, I think there is a pretty good excuse. It's that the Kings are limited in what they can offer Malik versus what he could get from another team on the open market.
Yeah, they can offer him $17.4 million starting salary with an 8% raise, and it works out to like a 4-year, $78 million contract. It can have an opt-out after year two, but not after year one.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, he would have to take like a 2-year... like probably $35, $36 million contract and then opt out and then sign a longer term deal.
Yeah.
It's because he's on early bird rights. He's not on standard Larry Bird rights. So you can't exceed the cap. And I've talked about this, Chris, there's really nothing else they can do.
Yeah.
Like, they can offer him that, or they can give away. They can try to give away Harrison Barnes, Kevin Huerter, and maybe Davion Mitchell and drop like $32 million under the cap. Shave $32 million bucks off, and then maybe they can get up to a contract at $25 million a year for him.
Yeah, no, and it's tough, and at that point, like, I don't know if Malik would be the type, because essentially he would be taking a discount to come back, and I don't know if he would be if at this point in his career, this might be the best chance he gets at a maximum payday, right? Not a max in terms of a max contract, but this might be the best chance he gets to cash in the league.
Like $100 million contract.
Like $100 million contract, which he could potentially get from Orlando and then not have state income tax.
And Toronto. And lose half of your money.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
The good people of Canada steal all your money. They do. It's like, hey, 50%.
Yeah.
They're just like, cut your check in half and we'll take the rest.
Yeah. Healthcare and all those things. But there's, you know, like, it would be about, if Malik came back, it would be about his relationship with Fox, and it would be about his relationship with Mike Brown, which, you know, I've had a lot of conversations with Malik about Mike Brown and his relationship, and we see them go at it frequently on the floor, but they do have an ability to bury it and like have an adult conversation man to man and not let it get personal. But you do wonder at some point, and we've seen, you know, we see that with other players and coaches where the dynamic is good, like Draymond Green and Steve Kerr, for example, right? Like they almost come to blows, but they'll like, you know, fight for each other a day later, right?
Yeah, and then Steve Kerr will enable him. We're okay.
Right, absolutely. but so I like it would be on the strength of the relationship between Mike Brown and Malik for Malik to be willing to take a discount. And Malik knows he could be here and be a really important piece on a playoff team versus going somewhere else. Maybe the team's a little worse, but he has an expanded role, makes a little bit more money. It's a, you know, if it's just about money, then Malik's gone. If it's about maybe maximizing his career and what he could be on a playoff team, maybe his best opportunity is to stay. So that's ultimately going to be Malik and his camp's decision.
Yeah. And like, look, I know some people said, hey, is there a way for Domas to give some money back? No, there's not. And it wouldn't matter either way, because Domas would have to give so much back that it would change the dynamic. Like, look, this is the way that basketball works. When you have good players, and they, if you get a budget player and they play well above who they are as a player, you have to pay them if you want to keep them, or you don't, and you got to start over. And so it's really difficult to keep. Look at, I mean, the Golden State Warriors paid, like before the Corey Joseph trade, we're paying like $186 million in luxury taxes here.
Yeah.
Like the Kings have not, they have yet to pay a luxury tax. And I know that that irks some people, that like it's under their skin. Why aren't the Kings paying? Why aren't they spending more money? Like there are limitations on how you can build a team and how you can pay.
Right, right.
And the key is that you draft players. They become better. Mm-hmm. You have to pay them again. And then it's the third contract that kills you.
Yeah.
And that's where the Kings are heading with De'Aaron Fox. It's the third contract that is going to kill them. I mean, like, there will be a point where De'Aaron Fox makes between $60 and $70 million a year. Everyone sees the Jaylen Brown contract.
Right.
That's the same exact contract, except for it's a year or two later, which means it's going to be even higher than Jaylen Brown's because the salary cap goes up incrementally. So, like, look, I think this is going to be a real test for Monty. It's going to be really, a test for Vivek.
Yeah.
There is no way to, like, buy an island and, you know, slide the deed into Malik Monk's name and say, oh, we bought you an island with a golf course. that doesn't work. And you also have to be, if you're Malik, you have to be super cautious. I mean, he's learning right now. I think the worst thing that could happen to the Kings and their hopes of keeping him is for him to have a knee injury, because it puts it all in perspective.
Yeah.
This is your payday. This is your moment. You have to do what's right for you and your family. And that's how I always look at it. Like, I would love to have Malik Monk here for another like 7 or 8 years and have him finish his career here. I just don't know that that's possible just because of the dollars and cents.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. And we're seeing, you know, this since he's been gone, we're seeing a different way to evaluate how valuable he is. Mm-hmm. When you don't have him, look at everything you're missing. And that's a scorer who can get buckets against really good defenses at times. And the Kings last night against Oklahoma City just were really missing that.
Yeah, it also shows you the type of player that you need to add in the offseason, because you can't go through another stretch where if you lose one, him or Fox, that you got nothing. And that's not to call out a Colby Jones or Keon Ellis, like, who have played really, really well in the moments they've been given. It's just a reality of the situation. Like, you have to have multiple players that can do multiple things. All right, we're gonna shift gears a little bit here. We've got plenty of time in this segment, and Chris is looking at the clock because this is the first time he's done something like this where he's been in studio. Yeah, Chris, we still have 11 minutes on this block.
Great.
And you know, I think I don't know this to be. Are you an A's fan, like Kyle? Or
formerly, I renounced my A's fandom once the I forget even which offseason it was, but once Olsen and Chapman were traded. That was, I just decided enough is enough.
Oh no, see, I'm still a I have what is it called when you're held by your captive? I've got Stockholm syndrome.
Sure.
There we go.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where I've kind of just been like, okay, you're gonna keep trading guys, at least you're still here. And you know, like, I wish it wasn't the case, but
well, it used to be they would win those trades. You know, they would trade
some of them.
They would trade Dan Heron and get Carlos Gonzalez back.
Yeah,
you know? But then it's they just stopped winning those trades. Even so, it was like, okay, it used to be okay. You're shipping out a superstar. You're probably going to get three or four really good players back. Now it's like, oh, you're shipping out a superstar and you're not getting anything back, and you're going to be one of the worst teams we've ever seen.
Ever. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm currently working on a story about just, you know, the A's coming to Sacramento and what it could mean for baseball in Sacramento long term. And, you know, Vivek came out and said it on the announcement day last week that, you know, Sacramento's in pole position for an expansion team, and this is an opportunity for the A's to showcase or for Sacramento to get showcased through the A's as a viable baseball market to Major League Baseball. I don't think the level of success the A's enjoy at Sutter Health Park is really going to have much to do with Sacramento becoming an expansion possibility for Major League Baseball, based on the reporting I've done so far. I think ultimately what's going to matter to Major League Baseball is Sacramento's bid and whether or not they can get the money together and they can showcase a good enough financing plan for a new ballpark that is competitive with all the other expansion possibilities, whether you're talking about Charlotte, Montreal, Nashville, Portland, and even Oakland now, right? So from what I've gathered, the thing I take away from the reporting I've done so far is like maybe the A's sell out every game until 2028 in Sutter Health Park and Sacramento shows out and it's a great vibe and you know, the crowd's crazy and it proves to be just like the A's drive a ton of fan interest, right? That's not going to be the end all be all, which gives the A's a possibility at expansion. It's going to be, do they have viable ownership? Who can come up with $1 to $2 billion in an expansion fee and make it clear that they're going to have a turnkey plan for a new stadium ready to go, right? Basically, what I've gathered, the A's could be really bad and there could be 2,000 people at Sutter Health Park a night, or they could be really good and 14,000 that sell out every game that they have here. It's not going to matter when it comes to expansion. The owners of Major League Baseball just want there to be legitimate ownership and a legitimate plan for a new ballpark. Those are going to be the deciding factors, not how successful the A's are at Sutter Health Park.
Okay. There's a couple of things I'm going to take on there. Number one, I've been in this community forever. I'm just going to say, it doesn't matter whether the A's are good or not. They will sell out every single game from here until they're not here anymore. I guarantee it. If it's 2025, 26, 27, and 28, every single game will be sold out, all 81 games.
Okay, that's bold.
I have complete faith in that. I don't think that people are going to care, because that's what the Rivercats did when they were new, when it was all new. And the fact that you're going to be able to go out and watch the Cubs or the Red Sox or the Giants or the Dodgers or the Yankees, all of these teams, like it's a transplant city. There's so many people that come here from other places because of the capital, because of, you know, the community that's here, but because of the Bay Area, because a lot of people end up in the Bay Area from somewhere else. And then they end up in Sacramento because they can't afford to buy a house in the Bay Area. And so I do think that this is a vibrant baseball community. The weather is great for baseball. It is a baseball town. There was professional baseball many, many, many years ago in this Salons. There we go.
Yes.
Anyway, this is a baseball town. And
I agree with that. Like, I think Sacramento could be a major league market, but that's not what this conversation necessarily.
No, I totally agree. But I keep saying, like, you're going to need, I've put the number at $2 billion. I think you'll need $2 billion for expansion. And you have to remember, baseball is really complicated because it's not just owning the major league club. You have to own all of these other things. So not only do you have to have $2 billion, you're going to have like another $1.5 billion to build a new stadium. You're already going to have either whether it's Yolo County or it's Sacramento County or whoever's going to come up with this money. Somebody's going to have the private-public partnership. The public is going to have to pay, whether that's $400 million like what they're doing in Vegas or even in Oakland, or it's going to be $800 million, whatever it is. you're going to have to start coming up with that now. You're going to have to start piecing it together now. And if not, an owner is really, they're going to have like $3.5 billion to do this. And yeah. Vivek is a very, very rich man. He's not that rich.
Right.
He's not that type of guy. And so who else comes in and how do you build this? And I do think if there's not a team in Oakland, it makes Sacramento probably the most viable market out there. Because it's number 19, number 20 in television market. It's a bigger market than Portland as far as television market. It's got a vibrant fan base. It already has the AAA. It's proven with years of selling out AAA ball games that it can be that city.
Yeah.
And I think just the marriage between the Kings and whatever that team is could just be brilliant.
Yeah, I agree 100%. But it's going to... it's going to come down to money, and there's going to be a lot of competition, and there's going to be a lot of Silicon Valley money coming in competing, and there's going to be Joe Lacob potentially coming in competing for expansion or if the A's become for sale. And I know that's the second part of this I wanted to hit on, too. There's this idea that because Vivek is doing this for John Fisher, he's going to have the inside line to potentially buying the A's. And maybe he does. Maybe there's some unspoken agreement that if and when John Fisher decides to sell, or if and when Vegas falls through and he decides to sell, that Vivek would be the first guy that John Fisher sells to. Well, that's complicated because, from what I've been told, in order for that to happen, like, Major League Baseball has made it so an owner cannot sell a team to somebody in a different market with the intent of moving them without there being a drastic approval. Like, it's exceedingly difficult. It's been described to me as like really difficult to borderline impossible to get that approval. The only way you can sell a team is if you intend to keep it in its existing market. So it's not going to be a situation like if the A's were to stay in Sacramento, it would be Vegas falls through. And if Vivek is involved, it's most likely Vivek buying into the A's as a minority owner, helping fund that way. Like, it's not John Fisher selling directly to Vivek and John Fisher stepping away. It's John Fisher remaining principal owner and Vivek coming on as a minority stakeholder. And then they, you know, reapply for relation and Sacramento goes through the same approvals that Vegas just went through, which that wouldn't be the hard part. But there, it's not going to be a scenario, I don't think, based on what I've heard so far, that the A's are just, that John Fisher, if the Vegas deal falls through, he's just going to give the team to Vivek and then step away. Like, John Fisher would still have to be involved. And even then, if John Fisher were to sell, there's, you know, other Major League Baseball owners will be looking at the entire pool of candidates who want to buy the team, and they'll have influence on picking out the best one. Right. So it won't just be like Fisher could say, I want to sell to Vivek, but it will not be as easy as Vivek just being the only guy. Vivek would need to get vetted. And obviously the relocation, like I said, you're not allowed to sell to somebody who has the intent of moving the team to a different market. So it's extremely complicated. But the point here, and it is just like, based on the reporting I've done, is just Vivek coming out and saying that Sacramento's now in pole position for an expansion franchise because they're getting the A's. I just, through my reporting, I don't find that to be true.
Okay. No, I mean, it's an interesting, like, I don't know how it's going to go. But it does help that Vivek is vetted through the NBA.
Yes, and it does open up, like, Sacramento has now thrown its name into the hat in terms of expansion candidates. That has happened, but it is not, Sacramento is now in pole position or guaranteed anything beyond having the A's play at Sutter Health Park through 2028.
Okay. Yeah, it's intriguing. And I expect Vivek to start lining it up right now. Like, we're seeing the way that Mark Cuban went out and sold a good portion of the Dallas Mavericks. There's money all over the place. We've seen Vivek go out and he tried to buy Juventus. He's tried to buy, like...
He's been sniffing around NHL teams.
Yeah, he's got huge ideas about what he wants to do and how he wants to grow not only Sacramento, but, like, his own brand as an owner. And, like, why not? He bought a team for a valuation of $535 million. It's now worth $3
billion. Right.
Like, you did okay there. You did okay there, Vivek. So I wouldn't doubt that he's going to start lining things up very quickly. I think it will depend on, like, how much space is there in West Sac. How much money can you get of public money to go towards it? You're going to have to get some of it.
Yeah, and
that's part of it.
I've talked to the mayor, the outgoing mayor, Daryl Steinberg, about that specifically. Sacramento doesn't have a huge appetite for public tax dollars being spent on sports venues.
But that's what they say, and then they help out.
Right. But so it might be through bonds, or there might be some other avenues, but it's not going to be, like, it's not going to come to a vote where, you know, Sacramento residents are voting on whether or not they want to support throwing their tax dollars at John Fisher to build a stadium here.
That's right. All right. Hey, we're going to step away. You're listening to the Insiders on ESPN 1320, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. When we come back, we're going to talk Niners. We're going to talk Niners because Chris Biederman, he's a Candlestick Chronicle guy. And Candlestick Chronicles, there we go. There it is. We'll see you in just a sec.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.